Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Guys, this is it. The last episode before Summer of Slaughter.
Dun, dun, dun.
At first, I thought you were going to say Spooky Season. I was like, so excited. I got like a little chill, but I was like, no. Not yet.
You're jumping the gun there.
I felt like James Brown. Like, you put the jacket on me, and I was like, no. I'm not dead yet. I'm not ready for it yet.
Well,
ready for Spooky Season.
So we got some fun stuff planned for Spooky Season.
I know, I'm so excited.
But first and foremost, Summer of Slaughter has to happen.
Yes.
Serial Killer Edition.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited. I hope you guys are so excited.
I think we only have one story that's not a serial killer. And that's because it's a special 100 anniversary, 100 year anniversary since it happened. It's an oldie but a goodie.
An oldie but a goodie, like your favorite sweatshirt.
Yeah.
I do love those.
It's a classic. We got some big names.
Lots of big ones.
You guys came in with the heavy hitters.
Yeah, we did.
For the schedule. You guys are going to be so excited.
You don't think we did too many, did you?
There's never so much as too many serial killers.
You're not going to see. All right, let me just go ahead and tell you. Ted Bundy fans, you're not going to see Ted this summer.
No. I tried.
I.
Sorry.
I said no. We can't burn all the good ones.
Dad said no
to Ted Bundy. Not this year.
Listen, we threw out so many serial killers, and Eric was like, no, we can't burn those like right now.
I just didn't want it to be all the top dogs, but don't worry.
We still have some.
There's some big boys in there.
Big dogs are coming to play.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Mm-hmm.
People are getting slaughtered.
Yes. In the summer.
Mm.
Well, at least this summer.
Yeah.
We talk about it. Not all of them happened in the summer.
Not all of them.
No.
No. But a lot of them from California.
Oh, yeah.
Does that say anything? What's going on in California?
From like Washington to Cal, like that whole
West Coast,
man.
What's going on the West Coast? What do you guys got going on?
Some shit.
Lead in the pipes.
Oh.
And then the paint.
Yeah. Some in the water.
Some classics. But today, we're talking secrets, a staple secret society.
Is it a secret if we know about it? It's not so secret.
We knew about the He-Man Woman's Hairs Club, so it's not really that much of a secret.
We know about Bohemian Grove now, thanks to Alex Jones.
Oh, I touch a little bit.
Ooh.
No, I don't do. I don't dive far. Mm. We don't have time for that.
That's not enough rabbit hole.
They kind of overlap.
Yes.
Because today's subject,
if you haven't read the title,
is Skull and Bones.
Woo!
This is our first secret society.
Our first birthday.
Some would say it's a cult, yeah. A death cult.
Yeah,
we like those.
Some would say it's a secret society, and some would say it's just a college frat. We'll let you be the judge. But all of these members have some very... What's the word I'm looking for? Interesting futures ahead of them.
And connections.
Yes.
And bloodlines.
I'm excited.
Legacy members.
You guys need to be excited with me.
Exactly. I'm so excited. Anyway.
And without further ado, Sam, take it away.
So, legend has it that the Skull and Bone Society has powerful members and mysterious rituals that are associated with the sinister conspiracy theories. The Skull and Bone Society was founded in 1832, 131 years after Yale opened its doors. Which, fun fact, I didn't know about Yale, which I always... It's not me if I don't do a fun fact. It was used to be used, like, it was primarily for, like, ministry.
Really?
Yes.
I would not have thought that.
Me either.
Was it, like, a Christian college or something?
It was used to, like, form ministerial people.
Well, I think they do that.
Something like that now.
A certain ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Of shaping the future of our country.
So, Yale University is actually the third oldest school in the U.S., and it's known for its, quote, strange Gothic elitism and its rigid devotion to the past. Journalist and Yale Secret Society member herself, not Skull and Bones, but another secret society.
One thing about Yale is it was riddled with secret societies.
Yeah, it's like not even...
There's like tons of them
there. There's like 40-something, I think, now.
It's crazy, and they almost got rid of them all.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that'll get touched on.
Yes. Briefly. There's so much.
It's a lot. We honestly probably should have done two episodes on this, but we didn't want to keep you waiting for Summer of Slaughter.
And it's our birthday. So
it is. It's our podcast birthday.
It is. So it's fine. So put a pin in Alexander Robbins. I'm going to talk about her later. When William Huntington Russell was a junior at Yale, he founded the Skull and Bone Society after spending a year in Germany among members of some of the most mystical and elite clubs in the world. When he came back, he was determined to start an elite secret society of his own. Soon after, he brought in Alfonso Taft. He served as Ulysses S. Grant's Attorney General and Secretary of War, and his son will go on to become President William Howard Taft. And he is actually the first Skull and Bones member to reach the highest office in the country. First one. Not the only, but the first. And so the two boys, William and Alfonso, formed the Eulogian. Then in 1856, it becomes the Russell Trust Association. Then it later became the Brotherhood of Death.
Oh, that's fucking metal, dude.
Oh, I love it.
Way better than the Russell Trust Association. It sounds like a fucking wannabe law firm. Debate club.
I think that's where they're going with.
So the Brotherhood of Death would later become known as the Order of the Skull and Bones.
Yeah, you're definitely not picking up any chicks at the college party. Yes, we are in the
Russell Trust Association.
Russell Trust Association.
Fuck Russell.
Like, that sounds like a fucking prog rock band, the Russell Trust Association.
Oh my God. The RTA.
Well, now it just sounds like a military complex. Bunch of mercenaries.
It kind of does. The emblem of the society is a skull and bones, obviously, with the number 322 underneath it. And it's said to refer to the year 322 BCE after the death of Greek orator Demosthenes. Man, I can't talk tonight. Which was a turning point in the transformation of ancient Athens from democracy to plutocracy. Another rumor of how the 322 came to be was that it was founded in 1832, and it was the second chapter of a German secret society known as the Bavarian Illuminati. The 32 for 1832, and the two representing the second chapter of the society.
I would say that one's probably horseshit.
Probably.
But with him going over to Germany and learning a whole bunch of esoteric shit...
Mm-hmm.
You never know, but I doubt it. They have any connection to the Illuminati, but other than they have a lot of high titled, high powered people.
Right.
I would love to cover them.
Well, the Bavarian know. Illuminati or the mysterious one that we think governs the country now?
Either one.
Yes.
The answer is yes to either one of those. Two episodes.
Yes.
Fair enough.
The members worshipped Eulogia, a make-believe goddess of eloquence, glorified pirates, and reportedly hatched their own scheme for world domination. There's also a Bible verse in Genesis chapter 3, verse 22, that says, quote, "And the Lord God said, Behold, the man is become as one of us to know good and evil." So, there's that. Another origin story of the Skull and Bone Society was that it was founded after something to do with a fraternity called Phi Beta Kappa, also possibly another secret society.
Well, no, it was. So, Phi Beta Kappa at Yale was like the club everybody wanted to fucking get into because nobody knew who the members were.
Right.
So, they were kind of the OG secret society at Yale.
At Yale.
And then everybody was like, well, nobody could get in except like the elite of the elite.
Mm-hmm.
So then everybody started making their own secret societies.
Right. And Phi Beta Kappa was actually forced to publish their member lists and reveal their symbol meetings and their rituals. And Phi Beta Kappa dispersed entirely, thus making way for the Skull and Bone Society to be born and rise to be the most influential society on campus.
Yeah, because when Phi Beta Kappa got their hand forced to reveal their members list, Yale was cracking down on secret societies. So what was happening in America at that time was America's point of view on secret societies was not good.
No, and I am going to... Oh, no, I did not add that because it was more Freemasons than it was.
Because the Freemasons, like, there was a bunch of anti-Freemasons rhetoric in the country at that time, which it's warranted to talk about. I won't get too much into it, but because of people's distrust in the Freemasons, because of they're running the country in the shadows.
Well, that and a man, I think his name was William something, he was denied entry into the local Masonic lodge, and he was like, "F you guys, I'm gonna release everything in a tell-all book."
Yeah,
and they killed him.
Yeah. Well, if you reveal the secrets of the Freemasons, they even say we will cut out your tongue. Like they take that shit real fucking serious, dude.
I don't know if they. I think he was just deemed as like a missing person or something. But his editor, like his publishers, like published the book anyway.
Mm.
I don't think I ever found the name of it, so I don't know how long it lasted out in circulation. But his publishers were like, "Yep, fuck it, go ahead and print it anyway." He's gone.
The public response to that in particular
turned
on all secret societies. Basically, secret societies were damn near outlawed.
A lot of Masonic lodges like shuttered. Like shut their doors.
Yeah.
After this.
Like you couldn't go there. It was not a good time if you were in a club.
No. Sociologist George Simmel wrote about secret societies and secret keeping. He found that secrets tap into the primal human need for information, which I resonate with that because I'm a nosy ass bitch. I need to know everything and I will not stop.
Are you a stereotypical Southern neighbor?
Yes. Yes, I am. I am.
Steve's over there like, "What you got in the room?
What y'all doing over there?"
Yeah.
I will be the first one to know if you go missing, though, or if you die in your house. Hey.
And for that, we appreciate you.
Edna over there hasn't come out to get her trash in a while or get her mail. Tell me. Everyone needs to know this other neighbor. And that's me. So.
Well, I'll be the first everybody's one. Got their place in the world, Sam.
Yep. I will happily sit in mine.
Sam says, "I will die on this hill.
I will die on this hill." So if something is being kept secret from us, we automatically believe that that piece of information holds some sort of value, making the secret keepers the holders of the something valuable. So we're like, "Oh, what do they know? Well, that must be really good if they're not telling anybody."
Hidden knowledge.
Yes.
Which is why, like, esoteric clubs like this did so well, because knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. But really, it's more likely it's just a bunch of drunk frat boys.
Doing rituals.
Yeah, like playing dress up.
Sacrificing virgins.
Well, maybe cats.
To their goats. Body counts.
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go. I follow what you...
I didn't know where she was
drinking
going.
Drinking deep
it.
Of this cup of Bud Light.
Can't.
Now we drink the blood. It's just Everclear with Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Ugh. That's awful.
Some PJ.
No, you didn't bring PJ into this.
The fuck is PJ?
Party juice, man.
Oh, jungle juice?
Basically.
Jesus okay. juice, jungle juice, whatever
you Jesus want to call it. Jesus juice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything thrown in a bathtub and let's drink.
Yeah. Let's see. We got 3 bottles of gin, 2 bottles of vodka, a bottle of Everclear, some watermelon, some pineapple, some oranges.
Always with the watermelon. The Skull and Bone Society is actually the oldest of the several secret societies at Yale. Every spring since 1832, the society chooses 15 members from the junior class. They only started to include women in the early 90s. And it's called Tap Day or Tap Night.
I bet they were really broken up about that. They're like, well, goddamn diversity.
Gotta let the damn girls in. The juniors are notified of their choosing by a society member who ritually taps them on the shoulder. Among the new members are those considered leaders on campus and notable names that the society believes it could benefit from in the future. The Skull and Bones has always kept its affairs a secret, but its members weren't always hidden. From 1865 to 1916, 80% of Yale's professors were bonesmen. From 1862 to 1910, every university treasurer, aside from 5, were also bonesmen. And from 1869 to 1921, every university secretary were also bonesmen.
Yeah, when everybody is in basically a death cult that is in charge of your university's money, it's probably not a good thing. Yeah, probably not. But I love the name Bonesman.
You would. I knew you were going
to. They love to bone.
Well, I mean.
I just fucked Christian up.
Yeah, I'm fucked up.
Christian, would you like to go see a Bonesman tonight?
Is there a skull involved?
Oh, there's a head involved.
All right, I'm done. Fucking done. Done with you.
That's a lie. For many years, the society posted the member roster. Some new members and some that were legacies. The initiation process to get into the Skull and Bones has been shrouded in secrecy, making many people believe it has something to do with black magic, occult practices, or even animal sacrifices.
Secret time. They're having their own version of secret time.
Supposedly, during the initiation process, new members must lay in a coffin completely naked and recount.
Oh, I love it. Sign me the fuck up. You're not selling. You're selling this.
Oh, wait. Wait till you hear what they have to do next.
Stop it.
Mm. You're going to love this.
Sit back. So once they get in the coffin completely naked, they must recount their entire sexual history to the fellow members.
Oh, that's going to take a while. That's going to take a while.
Should we add you on Summer of Slaughter? See what your body count is?
Oh my god, that would be fucking hilarious.
You don't want to know.
No, I don't.
I don't think anybody wants to know that.
Once upon a time, not long ago, she was a hoe.
Jesus Christ.
But now I'm not.
But now you're not.
Now I'm not.
It's said by exposing the most intimate secrets of their lives to each other in a vulnerable position, I'd say so, it fosters camaraderie and loyalty. So whether a young Harry Luce, the founder of Time magazine, lay naked in a coffin and told stories about his sexual conquests, or if William F. Buckley, author, conservative commentator, and founder of National Review magazine, jumped into a mud pie as part of his hazing, you could ask J. Richardson Dilworth, who manages the Rockefeller fortune, just how well off the Skull and Bone Society is and whether or not each member really gets a $15,000 gift and a guarantee of a lifetime of financial security upon being chosen, or if there is a sarcophagus in the basement of the tomb, which is their little headquarters.
Oh.
If Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart, back in 1937, dressed up as a skeleton and howled at the moon as a form of hazing in a red velvet room inside the tomb, or ask McGeorge Bundy, no relation to Ted, sorry, if he wrestled naked in a mud pie as part of his initiation as well, we may never know. You know, what's true, what's lore.
Well, one of the pieces of lore is not only did they have to recount their
sexual conquest,
their body count, if you will, they also had to masturbate to completion in the coffin as the rest of the members watched.
I did not read that.
Yeah. So that is one of the stories. They had
at least get like some kind of fluffing material of some sort, because
just maybe
start from flaccid.
Just maybe a skeleton, a sexy skeleton to look at.
Provocatively posed.
Mm. Look at my bone hole, baby. Oh, God. The look on your face is priceless. I don't know if I want to know what that's about. But I don't know if you cover this later on. Mm-mm. But also, you can never ask these people these questions.
Yes.
Okay.
William Buckley and McGeorge Bundy both went into the CIA after leaving school, also.
They're not the only ones.
Nope.
I wonder if their body count got bigger in a different way.
Actual bodies?
Yeah.
I don't know. So, Alexandra Robbins, the journalist I mentioned earlier, she published Secrets of the Tomb back in 2002.
Oh, she is a stifling bitch if she is going to just like out these people like that.
Or did she?
No.
Was it a misdirect?
Maybe. Skull and Bones is not the only secret society at Yale. There's Scroll and Key, Wolf's Head, Berzelius, and Book and Snake, just to name a few.
Berzelius. Is that like the Brazilian god of butt lifts?
No, not Brazil. Berzil.
Oh.
B-E-R.
And there's no BBLs going on in there, baby.
No BBLs, sorry.
No, there's got to be a club for that.
Probably. There's a lot of Real Housewives on TV. So yeah. I'm sure they have their
BBLs. I need to go join the hair club for men.
So all of the secret societies like to keep tabs on each other. Some in the form of dossiers that have reliability ratings in them. Students who were prospective bonesmen were ranked by their social class rather than their academic performance. Those with fathers who held high civil offices were often at the top of their list, whereas students whose farmers were farmers, merchants, mariners, and artisans would be at the bottom. This hierarchy determined every aspect of their life at Yale, from where they were housed, even down to where they sat in class, and what order they were announced at graduation.
So, with the bonesmen, and once again, you've probably already talked about this later on, or you will talk about it later on, but they have to pledge allegiance to their brotherhood.
Above all else. No, I did not. I didn't go into that.
So, when you become a member of Skull and Bones, your brothers come first.
Bros before hoes.
Above all else.
Literally, bros before everybody, everything, yeah. All the time.
So, like, if, let's say, there was a situation at hand and you needed to help cover something up, mm-hmm. somebody in the brotherhood would help you cover that up in a high position of power.
Yeah.
They have each other's backs 100% at all times.
Mm-hmm.
It is truly a brotherhood, even if it's to the, even if it's advantageous to the country. They will have each other's back first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. It was already decided where they'd fall before the student ever set foot on campus, and it was nearly impossible to improve their standing beyond that. All freshmen were seen as low man on the totem pole and had the most rules to follow. They couldn't wear hats or carry canes, which were both status symbols at the time. They couldn't address the senior students by their name, only as sir. This is back when they were first starting out and it was only men in the Skull and Bones. This paved the way for hazing, which the Bonesmen called, quote, trimming. Upperclassmen believed that it was their responsibility to improve the freshmen and mold them into proper Yale men. If any freshmen were caught breaking the rules, they could be trimmed by an upperclassman. Yale actually approved of trimming until the mid-1800s. A freshman was allegedly drugged from his dorm and out into the woods where he was stripped naked and covered in paint and forced to have his head shaved. That's what it took.
Yeah. A lot of the old colleges were all about it. It's just like good old fun.
Yeah. Just so, like, boys having fun.
I'm sure a couple people died and that got swept under the rug too.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alexandra said in a 2003 CBS interview, quote, "The Skull and Bones is so tiny. That's what makes this staggering. There are only 15 people a year, which means there are about 800 living members at any one time," end quote. She actually spoke about 100 Bonesmen who were tired of the secrecy. That's the only reason why they were willing to speak to her. She said, probably twice that amount hung up on me, harassed me, or threatened me.
Yeah, they don't take kindly to this shit.
No. Reporter poking around, journalist, whatever. No. The secret societies at Yale all have their little headquarters. There are 41 secret societies at Yale. Skull and Bones is actually the fifth richest, but the most powerful, which doesn't really track, but whatever.
It does because they're in very influential positions.
Right, but the fifth richest, I feel like the most powerful should be the richest.
But it's not based off of that. It's not based off of wealth. It's based off of, like,
power.
Where your family's ties are.
Yeah.
Which is how they chose their members.
Mm-hmm.
Of where their family was at, right?
Yeah. Not on wealth. So it's like your dad is a printing mogul. So, like, let's just look at it back in, like, the late 1800s. If your dad was a mogul of, like, the newspaper industry or the printing industry, well, we can use this to shape public view.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's the most powerful.
Yeah.
It's because of influence, and then these members are tied for life.
Yeah.
Like, Skull and Bones comes first. The club's interests are first, always.
Yeah. Skull and Bones headquarters is known as the Tomb. It is a Greek Revival style building. It's windowless and a brownstone on High Street, just off of campus, where members gather for events and meetings since the society's conception in 1832. It's rumored to have a landing pad on the roof for the society's private helicopter. It was built in 1856, and it was doubled in size in 1903 and has been since further enlarged. Which brings us to the year 1918. Under the cloak of night, Yale student Prescott S. Bush, the father of George H.W. Bush, dug up the grave of Geronimo, an Apache leader and medicine man who died in 1909 and was known for his resistance against anyone, Mexican or American, who tried to remove his people from their tribal lands. He spent the last 23 years of his life as a prisoner of war. Prescott and several other people took Geronimo's skull and two of his bones and some of his riding gear from his grave at Fort Sill in Oklahoma and brought them back to Yale, where they've been on display at the Skull and Bones headquarters ever since. Also the skulls of former President Martin Van Buren and Mexican revolutionary Pancho Villa are in the tomb.
What's crazy is their headquarters is an actual tomb.
There's no windows.
Yeah. It's an actual tomb.
Yep.
And the family of Geronimo was you cover that? Yeah. Okay. I'll leave that.
That's at the end.
Gotcha.
In addition to the tomb, Skull and Bones also owns Deer Island, a small plot of land in the St. Lawrence River in Alexandria, New York. It's used for get-togethers for the members. Every new member is required to visit. Servants used to serve decadent catered meals in nice cottages on the island. Though little is left of the buildings, the 40-acre retreat has dense undergrowth, some stone ruins, and one small lodge. One bonesman described it as a, quote, beautiful dump. It's also said that Deer Island is used as a retreat for members to spend the weekend and, quote, rekindle old friendships.
You'd think with all that money they would, repair it and not let it sit in disarray.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe since then. I don't know. Throughout history, some of the most prominent American figures have been bonesmen, handpicked Yale undergrad alumni to join the ranks of the elite. Papa Bush and Baby Bush, so George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush.
So that's three presidents have been bonesmen.
Yeah.
Crazy.
They followed in Granddaddy Bush's footsteps during their time at Yale. Members of the Skull and Bone Society have included a ton of government officials, such as former Secretary of State John Kerry, as well as actor Paul Giamatti.
I am not shocked by the John Kerry thing.
Well, that would have made either option in the 2004 presidential race a bonesman. Mm-hmm. No matter who won.
I talk about that.
Oh, well, fuck.
Shut up.
I dove deep.
I get so excited about shit.
I know you get excited. Some people claim that the Skull and Bone Society was responsible for the Kennedy assassination, creating the nuclear bomb. They're sponsored and influenced by another prominent, not so secret society, the Illuminati. And even that they have control of the entire CIA. But if the Skull and Bone Society was in fact connected to the Illuminati, it's likely that the Illuminati would be answering to the Skull and Bone Society and not the other way around.
That makes sense.
That tracks. Sense.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I don't think that the Illuminati have any ties with Skull and Bones. I'm going to flat out say that right now. What was the founding members influenced over in Germany? 100%.
I would agree with that.
100%. But I don't think it was the Bavarian Illuminati. I think there were other forces at work there.
These theories aren't so off base, even though some of them sound pretty far-fetched. At different points in history, bonesmen have had control over the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, Fords, and even the Heinz, yes, the ketchup, fortunes. They've had members rise up through the ranks and obtain high offices in the Council on Foreign Relations, powerful media corporations such as Time, and even three presidents of the U.S., Taft, and the two Bushes. During the 2004 presidential election, John Kerry and George Bush were both Skull and Bones members. Both men were asked about life as bonesmen during the debates, and neither man would comment. John Kerry said, quote, it's a secret, and wouldn't say anything else. George Bush said, quote, so secret, I can't say anything more. That was added into his autobiography. Bonesman Harry Stimson, Secretary of War under FDR, described his experience in the tomb to be the most profound one in his entire education.
So normally when the bonesmen are asked about Skull and Bones, they either give a short statement or they just get up and leave the room. They just disregard it and leave.
Mm-hmm. It really just depends on who you're talking to. Is that what it is? if they're going to say anything.
Nobody.
They can't.
They're not going to say anything, but who's going to say anything? I can't talk about that. Or it's going to be
a secret.
Yeah.
Well, you can't know.
Much like the members of Bohemian Grove, they're like, no, we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
During George W. Bush's administration, he had at least 5 bonesmen on his staff. Circling back to the Skull and Bone Society and their ties to Germany, I think, you know, I think you might know where I'm going with this a little bit. There's a theory that the society is linked to the Nazis and the Communist Party. The Nazis had connections to people in power in American politics. Now I fell down this rabbit hole. And I hit every link on the way down. I didn't want to believe that the Nazi Party was connected in any way to our politics over here, obviously. But I was like, holy shit. There's a clear and defined path of Nazi bloodlines in the American political circle. Investigative journalist John Buchanan looked deeply into the Bush family. He found that Prescott Bush was involved with Nazi Germany. I feel like he's talking about this. He was involved in a money laundering scheme for the Communist Party. His corporate assets were seized in 1942 for aiding the enemy. But still, that plus a few other scandals didn't hinder him from becoming a U.S. senator, paving the way for the two other Bush babies to enter into the world of politics.
What's interesting about this is they're playing both sides. Because at the end of the day, what I believe Skull and Bones wants is chaos.
Yeah.
It is chaos theory. If we fund the Nazis and we fund the Communist Party, one of those will come on top, and it's just a game. Mm-hmm. It's a massive game of risk. It's literally a game.
It's like roulette.
But it's mind blowing, and I ask, do some more research on this because we want to talk. We could harp on this for two to three episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But the history between the Nazi Party, the Skull and Bones, and the Communist Party is insane.
Yeah. George H.W. Bush became the head of the CIA and eventually the president, and was involved in the Carlyle Group that held military contracts. George W. Bush later became the president, following in Papa Bush's footsteps. He declared war after the 9/11 attacks and blamed bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. Supposedly, the bin Ladens were major investors in the Carlyle Group. I think I'm gonna be on a list of things to be taken care of after this episode.
Jesus. Well, hopefully we'll be around for Summer Slaughter too.
If I wind up dead, I did not kill myself. I'm just
gonna... Allegedly.
Allegedly! The Carlyle Group flew the bin Ladens out of the U.S. when all air traffic control was brought to a screeching halt. There's a video about the Carlyle Group and the Bush connections to bin Ladens on YouTube, the bin Ladens. Highly recommend you watch it. Maybe we can link it in our episode description.
Yes.
Okay.
See.
I will send it to you.
Yeah. Allegedly.
Allegedly. It will allegedly, supposedly, maybe.
I need you to make a soundbite of allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah, all this is alleged.
Yeah, supposed. Please it's not real.
Please don't unalive us.
Please. In my research into the Carlyle Group, which did not go very deep because it freaked me out, it brought me to the Bohemian Grove Club. And honestly, like, we don't have enough time to dive into Skull and Bones and the Bohemian Grove in the same episode.
Oh, it will be its own episode.
There's no time. The limit does exist.
They are intertwined, though.
Yes. I want to talk about the Skull and Bones logo for a second. The Skull and Bones symbol can be traced to Nazi Germany through the Bush's family bloodline. The Skull and Bones symbol was used by Nazi SS officers and is now used by soldiers all over the world, and also pirates.
Yeah, I want to say it probably came more from the pirates.
I'm with you on that, because I feel like that was like a pirate.
Nazis did have a way of stealing symbols.
They stole a lot of things.
They stole the swastika from the Hindus.
Really?
Yeah, it's...
What?
Yeah, the swastika isn't just something that they fucking came up with.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Learned something new today.
They stole the Black Sun. The Black Sun icon. They took that for themselves. The Nazis basically... Ooh, we got to do a Nazi episode.
I don't want to do a Nazi episode.
Oh, next year we're doing a Nazi episode. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I can't even throw in allegedly. I will
allegedly do the research for that episode.
Perfect. In 2009, descendants of Geronimo attempted to sue the Skull and Bone Society for the skull in question, but they were unsuccessful. U.S. District Judge Roberts ruled that the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act only applied to grave robberies that took place after the law was enacted in 1990, and Geronimo's remains were taken in 1918, allegedly.
Thank you, Sam.
You're welcome. The Skull and Bone Society has also been linked to eugenics, which is Greek for good birth, and is the study of methods to improve the human race by controlled selective breeding.
Ding, 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 which is also a tie to the Nazi party.
Yes, it is.
The Nazis were super into eugenics.
Yes, they were.
And some say eugenics are still going on today.
Where?
Planned Parenthood.
Oh.
Yeah. But
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. There's like a big study up on it. I was reading an article, and I'll link that article in our episode description on Apple Podcast. Highly recommend you read it.
Okay. So we got two links down there for you to read.
Man, y'all going to be doing a lot of reading this week.
Yeah, we are.
We're testing, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
Blessed.
It's multi-choice.
Perfect.
Did you listen to the episode? A or B? Yes or no? Did you share it with your friends? A or B? Yes or no?
Yes or absolutely.
True or false?
Yeah, true or false.
Are we your true. Favorite podcast?
True.
True. The answer is just true. There is no other choice.
You'll be beaten with a fire hose by the CIA if you pick false.
Allegedly.
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 It could be that the members of the Skull and Bones are trying to take over the world. But it could also be that there's actually nothing going on in there that's noteworthy. And they could all enjoy being the center of wild conspiracy theories. Hundreds of books, documentaries, and TV specials have been released in attempts to learn more about the inner workings of the Skull and Bone Society. But the only way to really know how it is on the other side of those tomb doors is to become a member yourself.
I'm good.
I'm too old.
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm going to pass. I don't want to jerk off in a coffin.
I don't want to lay naked in a coffin recount my sexual conquests.
It would be super relaxing.
I would like to lay in a coffin, just not naked and recount my sexual conquests.
Well, I mean, laying in a coffin naked's fine. It's the whole letting fucking dudes watch me jack it that kind of... turns me off of the whole thing.
Girls have to do that too?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got to play DJ Diddles. On the ones and twos.
Jesus fucking Christ. I love you. Well, that's the Skull and Bones, guys.
Yeah.
There's so much more to this that we basically sparks note this one for you.
There was...
Like I said,
I feel like you had to go down the rabbit hole for this one.
I did.
Like there was no other way.
I went down different rabbit holes for it, and I got really excited. But I was like, "This is just too much."
It was. I at one point I was just like, "I don't know. I don't. Where am I?"
What do you guys think of the Skull and Bones? Do you think it's just a bunch of frat boys, or do you think there's something to this?
You first.
Yes and no. I fully believe what George Simmel was talking about, that if I keep, well, at least for me, if you keep something from me,
I'm going to assume that that is a juicy piece of information, and I need to know what you know.
See, that is where me and Sam differ, because I don't care.
I don't care.
I am just whimsically living through my little life, and I don't even care.
Don't worry. There's some guy that cares enough to have a push pin board with yarn on it. And it's going to figure out all the secrets to the skull and bones.
And I am totally fine to listen to that because I'm excited about it. And I'll be excited with you. But yeah. As actually doing the research on it, I'm like, nah. I'm
and that man's that. Name was Alex Jones. I broke into Bohemian Grove.
No, God.
Did he really?
Yeah. Yes. He's the one that blew the lid off the case on Bohemian Grove.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he's the one that like, videoed the cremation of care. That's like what made Alex Jones Alex Jones.
Yep.
That's oh, the, shit.
Was exposing the, Bohemian Grove.
It's really cool.
They worship speaking an owl god named Moloch.
Okay.
Speaking of other things that are cool, can you believe that we are at a year?
I know.
I just want to thank you guys so much. Again, you're going to hear this. We love you. We thank you for everything. We just appreciate you. This is the time when Eric tries to tell me what to do, and go ahead.
Drop the socials.
Thank you. I do take those cues. Speaking of which, make sure you guys are following us all the socials, Facebook, Instagram. Make sure you guys are downloading the episodes. We really appreciate it. Please leave us reviews. We appreciate those comments.
We need the reviews.
Good, bad, ugly. We like it.
Preferably good reviews.
Well, we like if the there good. Is something that you would like to hear, after our scheduled programming of Summer Slaughter, we are always down to hear some feedback. So make sure you guys are listening and everything, and make sure you guys are downloading the episodes. And we love you so, so, so much. And it is about to be a very bloody summer. And I hope you guys are along for the ride with us.
Yes. And be sure to follow us on Twitter, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got some cool stuff on there. And TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
Sam's doing the God's work with the TikTok.
I'm doing God's work.
All right, guys. Well, we will see you for Summer of Slaughter 2.
Next week.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Kicking off with a doozy, though.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm excited.
There's even a vacation involved in this story.
A few vacations. Damn it, he's on a theme.
I had to do it. I had to do the vacation thing. Because it's like our summer vacation.
Oh, summer vacation. Make sure you guys stay creepy. We love you.
Stay creepy. See you next Friday.
Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.